On a dead-end street corner in a decrepit suburb of a never-ending city, a man sits with his head in his hands. He sits and ponders about all the events, decisions, and actions in his life that have brought him to this exact point in time. All the moments, birth of chaos and joy, that have led this unnamed man to make a decision. A decision that will change his and every other human's life for the rest of history. The man struggles with this decision, for he has never had to deal with anything this important. As a matter of fact, he himself has never felt important in his whole existence. He sits with his head in his hands and asks himself a question. Why him? Despite all the celebrities and world leaders, CEOs and geniuses, billionaires and politicians, all the powerful people enough to create change in this waking world, why him? This simple, lonely mechanic who lives in a one-bedroom apartment and has no next of kin except for a great uncle who lives somewhere on an island in the Pacific. Why him? Then another thought enters his mind. Maybe that is why. Perhaps the fact that this man who has never been noticed, treated, or desired, never really been anything at all, is that exact perfect suit for this situation. Maybe the fact that this mere mortal, this nobody, has been bestowed this gift, this burden, is in fact the most important part of this whole story. Before this decision can be made, a story must be told. The story of the decision, the man, and everything in between. Before telling you that story, there is something you should know. This story begins with the end and ends with the beginning. Everything in between is merely placed to serve the purpose of stitching the two together, like the stones on a path that show where to walk, or the threads on a blanket. Their whole existence is for one purpose, to be the means to which two ends are held together. The forgettable man was working on a forgettable car in his forgettable garage on a forgettable night. The kind of night that really has no impact on anyone. Not perfectly clear to show a luminescent full moon to make you stop and photograph. Not a stormy night to make you rug up in your comfortable clothes and watch television. No storms or rain to make the night appear on weather forecasts, and not a night where all the stars or no stars at all are visible. It is simply forgettable. The forgettable garage, where majority of this story takes place, is square in shape, or as square as someone can build a room to fit the dimensions of a geometric design. It has two workbenches, placed as close to each other as possible to maximize the available space in the concrete and brick room. The most distinct part of this room is that each of its four walls is reserved for a purpose. The wall across from the roller door, which contains the door into the man's house, contains three posters. A travel poster for the city of Tierport, where the man's father worked as a detective before his passing. A poster of the man's favorite movie, or at least it was at the time of purchasing and erecting the poster, and a poster of Counterfeit Ducks, the lackluster band that the man played guitar for in university that took off only once the man resigned to pursue his mechanics degree, which at the time was a sensible choice considering the band seemed to be going nowhere. In retrospect, it was perhaps the guitarist that held the band back. On the wall to the right was a rack that contained 23 tools, with space for 29. Over the last decade, the seven remaining tools had inevitably gone missing, been stolen, or both. The wall to the right of that was majorly made up of the roller door, with a switch to the left of it to control the opening and closing. Unfortunately, the switch no longer worked due to reasons the man has not yet figured out because of lack of time or interest, resulting in the roller door having to be manually opened and closed each time a vehicle, or anything else bigger than a normal door for that matter, were to enter or exit the garage. The final wall, which was perhaps the most forgettable of all, contained 740 red bricks, each separated from the one next to it, below it, or above it with mortar. 133 of the bricks have a crack of some sort, 114 are discolored, 184 are missing corners in one way or another, and the remaining 309 bricks are, well, bricks. The most memorable aspect of the garage, which is to say perhaps the only memorable thing at all, is the single light that hangs from the ceiling. A remarkably bright globe that adequately lights up the room. Mind you, not very well, but enough to not warrant complaints. The memorable thing about this light being that it flickers. This light flickers for an exact amount of 3 flickers every 32 seconds. This happens like clockwork for as long as the light remains lit. That is, until it doesn't. On this forgettable night, during a forgettable hour on the turn of a forgettable minute, the most unforgettable thing happened. The light flickered as it did, once, twice, and on the third, a quiet dink is heard, and then the light did not come back on again. This meant that the man, who had no source for seeing what exactly he was doing, had to use his knowledge of the layout of his garage to reach the roller door and open it to let the natural light of the pale moon illuminate his garage. This was a reasonably simple task, as the man had worked in this garage for a decade. It did, however, take him longer than expected. When he opened the door and the moon's light flooded into the garage, he grabbed a bucket which had been sitting in the left corner of the room for the last 2 months, 16 days, and 3 hours, and placed it, upside down, under the light as an extension of his legs, giving him the temporary height and the means to rescrew in his bulb. As the man screws the light bulb back into the socket, it lights up the garage ever more intensely than the moon could ever aspire to. The man steps down from the bucket, places it back in its corner, and returns to his workbench. Only he notices something. Something that anyone else who doesn't know his garage as well as the man does might never notice it. A white square. This white square is a piece of paper, folded in half exactly 4 times and placed in the exact center of the man's work area. The man is perplexed. He thinks that the wind perhaps blew the paper in from outside when he opened the door. However, the night was not windy, nor if it were could a breeze have placed the paper on the table so perfectly. This square was positioned so perfectly that it was screaming to be opened. "Build me," reads the note. The two words, scribbled in green pencil, lay above a diagram. A diagram that lays out the specific, minute details to build a device. A diagram so simple that it was almost impossible for anyone to have ever thought of it, yet something that could never have been made at any point earlier or later than when it had been. The man has a decision: to do the sensible thing and throw the paper away, or to descend into his own temptation and listen to the echoes of the diagrams that currently circle in his mind. He has to make a decision, and he decides. The light again flickers over his head, just as it had 32 seconds ago, and as it will in 32 seconds. The light flickers for 360 times more since the man made his decision. He steps back from his workbench with the paper in one hand and the finished device in the other. He has no idea what the device does. After all, it shouldn't really do anything, considering that the sum of its parts are nothing special in particular, nothing important or useful, just like himself, the thought enters his mind. The man was so invested in his work that he had forgotten to close the roller door again after fixing the light, and 3 hours later, the garage temperature has dropped to match the chilling temperatures of the entirety of the area outside his garage, however large or small that area may be. The light overhead flickers once again as a red car outside drives past, and another car backfires 3 seconds later. Unconcerned with these seemingly unimportant series of events taking place, the man examines the device that he holds in his pale yet stained hand. The device contains a button, that is all. A black box the size of a mobile phone with a small button of the same color. The light flickers again and the man thinks about how it did the same thing 32 seconds ago. He presses the button on the device with his right thumb. Whether unintentionally or not, the man does not know. And when he does, nothing happens. Nothing except for the light flickering overhead, a red car outside driving past, and a car backfiring 3 seconds later. The man pays attention now to the noises outside and realizes the temperature of the room. Before he makes his way over to the roller door to close it, he has an inkling in the back of his mind that the light, car, and backfire have a sort of familiarity to them. As he walks, he presses the button again, and once more, the light flickers, a red car drives past outside, and 3 seconds after that, a car backfires. The man pays more attention this time, thinks to himself about how strange of a coincidence that those three events happened so close to each other, so similarly. As he is thinking about this, he presses the button. The light flickers, the red car drives past, and the car backfires after 3 seconds. The man now realizes what he has created, as if it had been pulled right out of a work of science fiction, a temporal and spatial distortion device, a time machine, for lack of a better term. The man tests his theory, his realization. He tests it again, and again, and once more. Each time, not only going back to the moment of the light, car, and backfire, but now further back, to when the light flicked off, to when the roller door had been opened an hour before that. He wants to stretch his theory, wants to test limits. He looks around for inspiration of what to do next. his eyes cross the left corner of the room to the bucket. He thinks about 2 months, 16 days, and 6 hours before the moment in which he currently exists, to when the bucket first entered the garage. He thinks, presses the button, and surely enough, there he is, in his garage with a bucket full of water and soap for washing the car sitting in his garage, the same car that still sits there 2 months, 16 days, and 6 hours later. The man is now so perplexed, so dumbfounded with his new creation, that he is lost for what to do. In moments like these, he would normally think about when he was a young boy and would tug at his father on his long brown trench coat and ask him what to do. His father always had an answer, a plan, was always in motion in some way or another. The man missed his father, missed him just as much as the day he lost him. It never gets easier. You only grow more comfortable with the feeling of loss. It is in that moment, during that thought of how he longs to see his father one last time, that the idea crashes into him like a runaway train. He walks over to the wall with the door to his house, the wall with the three posters. One of his fondest memories of his father, the man's then 16th birthday, where his father took him out for dinner. The food itself was not particularly amazing, neither was the establishment. It wasn't bad or dirty by any means, it was just simply a franchise restaurant. It was not the food nor the establishment that made this memory so vivid. It was instead the words that his father spoke when the waitress took their order. "I'll have whatever you're going to have," says the father as he looks at the 16-year-old, a smile as wide as the Nile River on his face. It was that sentence that meant so much to the man, the simple words of affiliation between meals, family, friends. A thought and a press of a button had the man sitting in the same restaurant two tables down from the 16-year-old and his father. The man sat and watched the conversation, then sharing of meals that was inevitably too big for the boy and his father, the request for a doggy bag, and the sharing of stories, memories, and emotions between two human beings that are so comfortable with each other that they could only ever be considered as family. The man wipes a tear from his eye, thinks about what to do next, thinks about the other posters on the same wall, of the band he played in what seemed a lifetime ago. He reached into his right side pocket, pressed a button, and found himself in the university bar, with a burger in front of him, watching along with the other 11 people in the crowd, as a university band play a selection of covers of rock classics and originals that never lived up to the greats who they had covered only a few minutes earlier. Despite the average singer, offbeat drums, and slightly out-of-tune guitar, the man could not help but bring himself to have the same Nile River-wide smile on his face that he had seen on his father's face 12 years and 2 hours earlier. He sits and watches and listens and smiles and eats and remains content. With a full heart and a full belly, the man decides to return back to his forgettable life. Only there is a problem. The man cannot. He can't fixate on anything to take him back. Nothing in his life back in the future evokes such emotion or creates such vivid memories as these past two have, simply due to the fact that the man's life is so forgettable, even he can't remember it. The man tries to think of the light, the car, the backfire. He tries to think of the roller door. But he still sits in the same chair in that bar. He tries to think of the bucket of water or the cracked and broken bricks. He tries again. He tries once more. Nothing works. The sands of time have frozen and the hourglass is in suspension. So he does what he thinks is best to do, to make the most of the time he now has. The man travels. He travels the world, his childhood and adolescence. He travels the world to the places he has never been and always wanted to visit. Then he travels to the places he has never even heard of. He is never poor nor in danger. He makes his money off bet winnings, the ones he remembers, the outcomes of at least. He manages to save a few people's lives too, other unimportant people that won't impact the future whether they're there or not. He's never empty, nor broke, nor sad per se, but he never quite feels right, never feels whole, never feels like he belongs. He travels back through his great memories growing up, the ones that he wanted to revisit one last time, see what it was like from a different perspective. He spends his years with a purpose. He watches and reads every science fiction movie and novel, reads theoretical ideas of time travel, research papers and hypotheses. He comes to a conclusion. All of this knowledge and time culminates into a thought, the only good one he has had since his temporal capture. He travels to the address where he lives. Well, technically where he lived and where he will live. At this current point, he has yet to purchase the property, and the previous owners no longer live in it. The house itself is in a similar position to the man, existing in time, but not for any purpose other than just being there. As he approaches the house, he notices that the roller door is slightly open at the bottom. Not enough that anyone would see it, only enough to be noticed by someone who knows where to look. He opens the door and ducks inside. He is faced with an empty room, a room with four walls of brick and a concrete floor. The bricks are in perfect condition, and the walls are bare. There is a light hanging overhead. Looking at this vacant room, he is again bowled over by another realization, an inevitable idea that requires action, has always required the same action, and always will. The man returns to the garage an undesignated time after his first visit. How long had passed, he was not sure. It did not matter. At this point he, or his other self, has moved in and set up his garage into his own personal workshop, complete with 29 tools on one wall, an open roller door on the other to let in the summer air, a wall full of perfectly rectangle, perfectly brick bricks, and as he peered into the room, saw a younger self putting three posters on a wall. He watches himself receive a phone call requiring his other self's attention somewhere on the other side of the city. The man places a small rock underneath the roller door, small enough to be unnoticeable, but large enough to do its job to the best of its ability, to stop the roller door from touching the ground. As his other self races off to a broken car transmission, the man enters the garage, the pristine, upkept garage that he has spent so many years of his life in. He throws the rock in the corner of the room as it lands under a small stall next to the desk. It is time to start his plan that will lead him to his end. The man paces around the garage, setting up everything he needs for his slow burn plan, to make sure everything works at his one shot to return home. He grabs a hammer from the tall wall and proceeds to smash it into a brick on the opposing wall, creating a crack on one of the corner bricks. He returns to the garage every little while between trips around the world, trips through history, and does this over and over again, sometimes creating cracks, other times breaking off corners of some bricks, each time with a new tool, a tool he would take with him afterwards in case he needed them again. Over the years of doing this, he had taken 7 tools in total. One day, he turned one of the tools on the switch that controlled the roller door, or rather more accurately, controls the roller door no longer. He also, during his final 2 returns, takes 2 actions. On the first return, he ever so slightly unscrews the light bulb that sits so perfectly in the light fixture hanging from the ceiling. He unscrews it not enough to stop the connection, but enough that every 32 seconds the light will flicker for exactly 3 times. The other action takes place on a forgettable night in a forgettable garage. He takes all the knowledge he has gained from the novels and movies of science fiction and the research papers and hypotheses of time travel and grabs a piece of paper and a green pencil and scribbles down the exact diagram that lays out the specific, minute details to build a device. A diagram so simple that it was almost impossible for anyone to have ever thought of it, yet something that could have never been made at any point earlier or later than when it had been. As the man folds the paper exactly 4 times and hides it in a crack in a brick, the first crack he ever made with the first tool he ever stole from himself, he hears a car door close and the roller door start to be lifted. He had stayed too long and lost track of time, which is a funny thought considering he is a time traveller. He quickly rushes over to one of the corners of the room and hides under a desk next to a small stall that shelters a rock underneath. The man sits under the desk, careful not to move or make any noise that might alert himself to his presence. He sits under the desk for a while until he sees a rock under the stool. This is exactly what he needed. He slowly reaches for the rock, picks it up, aims, and throws. Dink! The light goes out. He gets out from under the desk and heads towards the brick wall. He reaches for the first crack he ever made and pulls out a small white square and places it perfectly on the workbench. He sits again under the table before the light is fixed as his other self works away at creating the design. He only wishes he was smart enough to close the roller door before starting. Where he may not have been feeling the cold the first time, he definitely feels it now. Eventually, after sitting under the desk for hours, the light flickers, A red car drives past, and 3 seconds later, a car backfires. A few minutes later, he sees his former self look at the bucket in the other corner and then, gone. The man has finally done it. He has returned to his life, 12 years later, exactly where he left it. He reaches into his pocket and pulls out a device. He looks at it intensely as the realization comes to his mind. He has just sentenced himself to 12 years outside of time, only so that his current self can continue along with his life. Then a more important thought enters his mind. He had been sentenced to 12 years outside time so that another version of himself could continue along with his life. He has created a never-ending, everlasting, temporal loop of himself, for himself, by himself. He has created a purgatory for every version of himself that has yet to come, and every version of himself that has already been. This seemingly forgettable, unimportant man is undoubtedly, unequivocally, the most important man to exist in time. The man is overwrought with guilt, sadness, anger, frustration, pity, loathing, and hatred for himself, for his actions, for what he did to himself, for himself. He realizes that his purpose in life is to be the cause of the best and worst thing that ever happened to him, and also be the one that has to solve it. He finds himself split between two choices, break the loop or to continue on. If he chooses the former, he could travel back, stop the note from being written or the device from being made. There are infinite ways he could stop this situation occurring again and again like a record on the end of its track. If he were to choose this, however, he would cease the existence of all the other versions of himself yet to come, erase them from time, which undoubtedly will erase his current self. As soon as he breaks it, he will be no more. He will be worse than nothing. He will have never existed and will never exist. Where before all this happened, he was a nobody that was unnoticed. If he does this, he will literally be nobody and will never be noticed or remembered by anyone or anything. His other choice is to simply remain, live on. To subject himself to the guilt of his actions for the rest of his life and the rest of his others. For as long as time exists, his actions will impact himself in the most monotonous way possible. But he will live. His current self will live on for the rest of his time, no longer unnoticed or forgettable. He could go to the government, show them what he has made, or perhaps release to the world his plans, make billions and be remembered forever in history. But at what cost? Where he only used the device to visit his own experiences, there are others out there, he is sure, that would use a device like this to create the worst world possible. This is his choice, to cease from existence and let the world remain how it is, where he and other versions of himself are unknown, or to remain, subject every version of himself to the same loop over and over, the same guilt over and over, to continue his life now and risk the world and entirety of time. He tries to decide what to do. He thinks of his dad and what his father would say, but now all he can think of is the other version of himself sitting 2 tables down, watching, and then the version after that, then the next and the next, and so on for eternity. He cannot look at the garage or the things inside it. He runs outside, runs down the street, and doesn't stop until his feet give out. He needs to sit down, but there are no benches, so he sits on a street corner. Torn between his decision, tears roll down his cheek. He puts his head in his hands to hide himself from anyone who might be watching, from himself. On a dead-end street corner, in a decrepit suburb of a never-ending city, a man sits with his head in his hands. He sits and ponders about all the events, decisions, and actions in his life that have brought him to this exact point in time. All the moments, birth of chaos and joy, that have led this unnamed man to make a decision. A decision that will change his and every other human's life for the rest of history. The man struggles with his decision, for he has never had to deal with anything this important. As a matter of fact, he himself has never felt important in his whole existence. He sits with his head in his hands and asks himself a question. Why him?